hate to lose. Oh, every day I have the blues. Every day I have the blues. You see me worry.
Greetings. Welcome to Confessing the Blues. I'm your host, Jim Ange Anderson. On today's show, we have blues singer and host of WVPE's Blues Review radio show for the past 34 years, winner of the Keeping the Blues Alive Award, Ol Harv Stauffer. Let's roll. So, Ol Harv, welcome to the Farmhouse Studios.
Well, thank you, Ange. It's good to be here. I really, like your house here.
Cool. Yeah. It's nice to have you sort of on the other side of the desk for a change, right?
Yeah, it feels a little strange, but it feels good, too.
Yeah.
Your studio is really nice.
Well, cool.
It makes me feel at home.
It is, it's very homey.
Yes.
Yeah. You're celebrating 34 years on the radio?
Yes, 34 years. In fact, it will be September this year. Will be 34 years, that I've been doing the Blues Review, and definitely a blessing.
And it's always been on WVPE?
Always been on WVPE, yes.
Yeah. And we were mentioning earlier, looking at the records, about B.B. King and the Live at the Cook County Jail record. Can you talk about the significance of that record?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, I knew who B.B. King was, and B.B. King, Albert King, Freddie King, Muddy Waters, but I was adopted by the Stauffers, and when I was about 5 years old, they told me that I was born in Cook County, Chicago, and so I walk in this record store when I was a, teenager, and I see this this LP. It said B.B. King, Live at Cook County Jail. Well, it really stuck out, because I related Cook County, and so I picked it up, and that album got me so engrossed in the blues and the words, just... songs like How Blue Can You Get,
right.
Worry, 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 and, 3 o'clock Blues, and
Thrill Is Gone is a great
Thrill
version.
Thrill Is Gone,
it's
a great version of Thrill Is Gone, and Every Day I Have the Blues, but anyway, that whole album got me hooked on the blues, and that's kind of how it got started. Of course, at that time, I didn't know it was recorded in 1970 in Chicago, and I didn't care about that. I just cared, that
right.
said Cook County. But that album was what really got me, hooked into the blues,
And then subsequently, in your travels and in your work, have you met B.B. King?
Yes. Yeah. In fact, I've got a few pictures on my Facebook, and I've met him a few times.
Mm-hmm.
And I've met his daughter. In fact, his daughter, Shirley King's been on my show a couple of times. And, B.B., a couple times that I seen him, he thanked me for, playing his music, and he was really nice. I've got a picture hanging in my blues room at home that was taken in 1988 at the Moore Civic in downtown South Bend, and this lady took a picture and then made a poster of B.B. King. You got a picture of this with Lucille, and he's got his eyes closed, so he's feeling it.
You know,
he's holding, that note that B.B. always held.
Sure.
And I took that poster picture to Maryville, where he played at the Star Plaza, and he signed it and said to Harvey, "Best wishes, B.B. King." Well, I've got that hanging in my blues room, but that night, you wouldn't believe how many people came up and said, "Hey, I'd give you... I mean, outrageous. Lots of money. I mean, I don't know if it was $500, but I mean, they, you know, I'd give you a couple hundred dollars for that picture. I said, well, why do you want a picture that says to Harvey, B.B. King? Mm-hmm. I mean, of course, they just wanted B.B. King's autograph. But right. But anyway, I've got that hanging in my blues room, you know, and of course, it's something I cherish, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's cool that, you started with B.B.
Right.
With his music and able to. You know, to really to get to know him and to work with him and help promote his music.
Yes, yeah, and you know, I've still try to, you know, I don't play B.B. King every show, but I still try to keep his memory alive. You know, because he, one thing you got to say about B.B., he did so much for the blues. Yeah. I mean, you know, so
long live the king. Is
yes,
what they say, right?
That's for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, we just lost Lonnie Brooks.
Yes.
And we were talking about his services. And you mentioned that you met your wife at one of his shows.
Yeah.
So you've got some history with Lonnie and the family, right?
I sure do, yeah. In fact, it was a club called Center Street Blues Cafe at the 100 Center in Mishawaka. And Lonnie Brooks was playing there. In fact, Lonnie Brooks played around our area quite often. Sometimes he was on the same show with Coco Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, this night that I met my wife, it was kind of like, you know, we were both at Lonnie Brooks' show, and you know how it is. You're looking around the room, and all of a sudden our eyes met.
Right.
And it was one of them things. But anyway, he always said, because my wife is born on Halloween, you know, that, you know, Harv, Armita's a witchy woman, and man, she definitely put a spell on you.
Right.
So anyway, Lonnie Brooks, he had been on my show, and we'd been to quite a few shows over the years with Lonnie, and so when he passed, we both said we've got to be there for Lonnie, and you know, we've been to a lot of funerals, celebrations of life, or homegoings, whatever you want to call it. And that's my feeling, is if you're there for the good times, if you can be there, you should be there, you know, during the times.
Oh, sure.
That
pay when, your respects.
Yeah, yeah, pay your respects. And, you know, Lonnie was just a great entertainer. And, you know, I even had another thing about that night at Center Street Blues Cafe, I had this album called Guitar Junior.
Okay.
Before he got to Chicago, he was called Guitar Junior.
Yeah.
And I said, hey, Lonnie, I said, would you sign this? And he goes, Harv, I'll sign that because of you. But he says, I didn't make a penny off the crawl and, you know, roll, and all, you know, other
sure.
family rules, things like that. But he signed that album. But like I said, he said that he didn't get his due for it. And, but like I said, Lonnie was a great
gentleman,
great human being, always friendly, had time for his fans, and he was one of them guitar players that you could definitely tell just by one chord
right you away. Know. You know, yeah, that's Lonnie Brooks.
You knew it was Lonnie Brooks, yeah. Right? Yeah. So,
and of course, his children are following in the footsteps.
Yes, Ronnie Baker Brooks and Wayne,
yeah.
And. You know, Ronnie was with Lonnie that night at Center Street Blues Cafe, and at that time, O.C. Anderson was pretty much the lead guitar player.
Uh-huh.
Lonnie was just kind of, you know, doing rhythm.
Right.
And now Ronnie has come along where he's like, he's got this big band with three horns, and
sure.
And he's sound like a B.B. King, you know what I mean?
He's got a great new record on,
oh,
too.
Yeah, Times Have Changed.
Yeah.
That is such a great album. In fact, I told him at Center Street, Vegetable Buddies Benefit for the Homeless, it was their 40th anniversary. I told him, I said, you know, your album has been number one on my playlist for 3 months. I mean, because there is so much variety. You know, he does some Joe Tex and his dad plays on a cut on
mm-hmm.
there, and also a Bobby Blue Bland is on
sure.
one of them.
And,
you know,
and it's just great production.
Right.
Yeah.
Steve Cropper is
yeah.
on a Joe Tex thing, you know. And I remember when he played the Firefighters Blues Festival in South Bend a couple of years ago. He came out with Show Me by Joe Tex, and mm-hmm. I'm going, wow, this is, you know, with horns and everything, and it was just, you know, it's something different than just the old
Sweet
blues
Home Chicago
and,
or
yeah,
something.
Sweet yeah. Home, yeah, yeah. And but, you know, the night before we did our visitation for Lonnie, he played at Vegetable Buddies, and he played 2 hours straight with Billy Brandt mm-hmm. on the harmonica. And at the end of 2 hours, he said, you know, folks, I can't play no more.
That's all I got.
I gave you all I got. And he said, now I got to get into funeral mode. But he says, I did this because of my dad wants me to keep his memory alive and the music going. And the blues is a healer. And,
yes,
you know,
sure.
I had some people, you know, when Lonnie passed away, they said, hey, do you think Ronnie will play? And I says, and that's exactly what I said on Facebook. I says, I believe he'll play because he wants to keep his dad's tradition alive, and the blues is a healer. And anyway, he asked me that night. It was an honor because he asked me. He said, "Harv, would you bring us on?" And I said, "Well, of course I would. I'd love, you know, I'd be honored to." And when I did, I dedicated the whole evening to his father, Lonnie mm-hmm. Brooks, and had everybody in the place stand up.
Right.
The place was packed, and it, of course, it touched Ronnie's
heart
yeah. too.
It's beautiful.
You know? Yeah. So it was a beautiful night, you know, and we're so glad that we could be there for the visitation.
You mentioned how it's the music is such a healer. I mean, a lot of people think of music as sad and down and out, but it's such a joyous music to me,
oh.
you know, and it really does. I mean, with it makes you feel better that
right.
you're not the only one suffering. And,
right.
And it, there is something that really enriches people.
That's right. And, you know, a lot of people, they don't sometimes realize that sometimes I'll play a song on my show and it just, you know, it kind of clears the cobwebs of things that happened to me. You know,
yeah.
Because, you know, sometimes, you know how it is, people, they think they know you or they, you know, they put you on a pedestal because you're on the air or you're playing in a band
right.
or whatever. But you got the same gig going on. You got the same problems. You got things going on in your
car's
life.
Going to break down.
Yeah, right, right.
You know.
And just, you know, things that happen. And,
sure.
And,
life happens.
You know, and, you know, over the 34 years, I mean, Armita and I have been married now for 27 years in May, and we've been together 30. But, I mean, before that, over the the 34 years, I've gone through a couple of divorces, you
sure.
know, and so, you know, I always say, hey, I never plowed behind a mule, but I've had my blues, you know, so I know, you know, I know what it, you
sure.
know, what the blues is, you know what I mean?
I hear you. Yeah, man. Amen.
Yeah.
Before the show, we were talking a little bit about Coco Taylor. Do you have
yeah.
any recollections about Coco Taylor?
Yeah. You know, Coco would play at Center Street Blues Cafe, and that's when, you know, she was married to her first husband, Pop Taylor, which Pop Taylor, you know, was kind of like her manager
mm-hmm.
or, you know, her driver. And, you know, of course, he supported that lady, you know, big time. And, you know, Pop, you know, if the band wasn't on that night a little bit, you know, sometimes. And Coco would, you know, Coco was, you know, she wanted to sound good.
Right.
You know, so she'd call you out on stage, you know, call a name out. And so sometimes Pop would get out of his seat and go up there and say, you better listen to that lady, you know. And but Coco, you know, she was always, you know, she gave me my 10th anniversary plaque. She brought me on stage and she played at ZB Falcons in the west side of South Bend. And she says, I want to bring old Harv up here and I'm going to, you know, present this plaque. And I'll never forget that night. But she was a great lady and a great entertainer. And I remember when she'd bring her grandson on stage, In fact, Cookie's son,
right.
Candyman. And, of course, he wasn't really plugged in, but he'd come out there with that Flying V guitar. So, because she was a family-oriented lady, you know.
And
I mean,
that's like the family business.
Right.
Pop and Cookie. And,
right,
yeah.
Right. So, anyway, you know, I was at Pop's funeral when he passed away, and did you know Professor Eddie Luss?
Sure.
He played it. You know, he played the piano, yeah, and the organ at Pop's funeral. And but anyway, then when Coco passed, we were at her funeral too. And you know, she, like I said, there'll never be another Coco Taylor. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. So, the Queen of the Blues. I mean,
Queen of the Blues.
There's other women out there that are sort of aspiring to be the next,
sure,
Queen of the Blues, but.
Of course.
There's only one.
That's right. That's right. That's right. Yeah. So,
so walking up into the studio, we're looking at my wall of fame, and you said that you gave John Lee Hooker a ride home from a gig one time.
Yeah, he was playing at a club on the north side of South Bend called Duke's Bistro, and I seen old Pine Top there. In fact, I even seen John Fogerty there one night. Mm-hmm. You know, he just walked in and got up and jammed that night. But anyway, I seen Blind John Davis and Pine Top, different people there. But John Lee Hooker was playing with the Coast to Coast Blues Band with Roy Rogers.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, after the gig, he didn't want to wait around for the band. So he said, "Hey, Mr. DJ, will you give me a ride to my, you know, hotel? Well, you're staying at the Knight's Inn, you know, them purple."
Sure.
Purple. Everything's purple on the walls and, you know, stuff. But anyway, he stayed at Knight's Inn in Roseland, Indiana, which was just down the street and north of South, downtown South Bend. And so I took him to his hotel and or motel, and we sat there and talked about the blues for a while, you know, and it was the experience I'll never forget, you know. So
that's excellent.
Yeah.
And, you know, it occurs to me, you know, you start off as a fan of the music.
Right.
Listening to the B.B. King record, next, you know, you're you know, working with B.B. King. And so you went from sort of a fan to just a peer and equal of some of these guys. And you also sing and perform and you're doing shows with some of these the other groups. You mentioned earlier about Blind John Davis.
Yes. Blind John Davis was, you know, I met him through a friend of mine that also for a while did a little bit of a blue show at WVPE too.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, Blind John played at Duke's Bistro a few times with S.P. Leary. And so one time he asked me if I could come to his house, you know, on the south side. And I said, I'd love to. Anyway, so I go to his house and you know, I was younger then and I was kind of self-conscious and, you know, kind of, you know, oh, Blind John and, you know.
Yeah.
And so I was wanting to do everything for him. I was going, "Hey, Blind John, can I do this?" And he finally said, "Oh, Harv, you know, you can't do nothing for me other than just tell me what." He says, "I don't want to step on the cat when I get too close to the cat. Then you tell me, you know, I don't want to step on his tail." But anyway, then all of a sudden, he just get up and get on this upright piano and just start, you know, banging away and playing them blues and singing. And anyway, so after a few hours of visit with him, he said, "Hey, you going to take me down to Lily's tonight? I got a gig down there." And I said, "Well, yeah, I'm going to take you down there." And anyway, he told me, "Go out and get that cassette that we made," you know, cassette.
Yeah, oh yeah.
"Go out and get that cassette that we made at Duke's Bistro." Well, he got me up and we did a song or two at Duke's Bistro with S.P. Leary on the drums and stuff. Anyway, so I went out there. Well, I come back in, he's not in the house, and I'm going, I wonder where, you know, what's
going
on.
Go?
Yeah, where'd he go? And all of a sudden, he comes walking out to the living room. He has this pinstripe suit on, these sunglasses, look like Ray Charles. He's all decked out, and he says, "Are you ready to take me to the club, you know?" And I said, "Yeah." Well, I took him down to Lily's, and anyway, him and S.B. Leary, you know, entertained that night and played their music, you know. One thing about Blind John, you know, he was kind of like a, you know, he'd kind of, well, like a father, you know, wanting you to look out for the music. You know, he says, hey, I've been in, you know, this music for a long time. In fact, they say he made 34 trips overseas, and unfortunately he was buried in a pottery field, so he had nothing. But he'd tell you, you know, no, there's a lot of good people in this business, but he says, you know, sometimes some people you meet, you got to tell them right from the get-go, you're barking up the wrong tree, mother. You know, that's exactly the way he had it. That's exactly the way he said it, too, yeah, you know. Yeah. So, but, yeah, that's, you know, experience I'll never forget, you know. So,
well, you've also talked about some conversations we've had in the past about, oh, so-and-so, yeah, they did the show, and when they stayed at the house, we had dinner together, so... You know, can you have any other recollections?
Oh, yeah, of course. I could. Pine Top Perkins, you know, he used to stay at our house. And, you know, he was a down-to-earth gentleman, great piano player. Of course, he played with Muddy Waters for 11 years. Yeah. And, you know, one thing about Pine Top or Willie Big Eyes Smith, people like that, when you know, we make a big deal of playing with Muddy, but they'd tell you that was just a job to
them. Just a gig. Huh?
Yeah, just a gig, wow. You know. But anyway, he stayed at our house a few times, and he'd call my wife. That's Mom, meet him. he'd call me Hambone, you know. And, you know, Pine Top was a great guy. You know, he lived in La Porte for a while. And some people didn't know that he moved to La Porte, Indiana.
We showed up one time to play at Bucky Lee's.
Bucks Working Man's.
And sitting at the piano before we're playing is Pine Top. We're like, this is backwards. We should open for this guy.
That's right.
But he was just hanging out and playing, and it was beautiful.
Yes, know? Yeah, yeah. And, Pine Top was, you know, he had no big head, you know. In fact, a lot of times he could care less about the WC Handy Awards or any of that stuff. You know, all he cared about is putting a smile on someone's face.
And going fishing.
That's about it. Yeah. And then, of course, how many people live after getting hit by a train, you know?
Yeah.
And he called McDonald's McDaniels, you know, and, but he said, what happened? The gates went up and I was trying to get to McDaniels, and
right.
Well, there's another train coming the other way, and caught him, you know. But he lived through it, you know.
Yeah, his work was not finished.
No, that's right.
And lived a long life.
Right, yeah. Right. So he had a very fulfilling life, you know. Didn't pass away till he was 97 years old, and
it was great. Both him and Willie got a Grammy.
That's right.
You know, right. I think they were both still alive at the time.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know, a guitar player that lives in South Bend was on that record too, Little Frank.
Okay.
Know, which he, you know, plays at the Midway quite often.
Right.
And also works with the Cashbox King sometimes.
Jerry Hunt.
And yeah. Jerry Hunt, different people like that, you know. But he got a Grammy also.
That's excellent.
So, but yeah, Pine Top, he was just a great, you know, human being, and you know, someone that me and my wife, we miss all the time, you know, because we went to his house a few times when he was living in Chicago, and my wife made him flowers and to, you know, like wear a boutonniere.
Oh, right.
You know?
Yeah.
And then when we got married in 1992. We didn't have a lot of money, so we went to Blues Etc. on Belmont, and Pine Top was playing with Jimmy Rogers, the Lou Della CD release party on Antone's Records. It was Jimmy Rogers, Pine Top, Willie Big Eye Smith, Kim Wilson on the harmonica, and of course a couple of Texas musicians too, you know. But
pretty good wedding band.
Oh yeah, yeah. but anyway. You know, that's what we wanted to do because we had not a lot of money, but we wanted to. We went there for the Lou Della CD release party and hung out with Pine Top and Jimmy Rogers, Kim Wilson, you know, different people like that. And then also went to Chicago Blues Festival, you know, so.
Well, it sounds like Armida is definitely has the blues in her soul, that you guys are kindred spirits.
Yes. She definitely supports what I do. I mean, she loves what I do. And, you know, when I was doing this and the band and working, sometimes she'd say, you know, oh, I wish you'd have a weekend off. But she said, I don't want you to have too many weekends off because you know how it is. If it's in you, you got to let it out. And eventually you kind of, you know, you kind of go stir crazy.
It's Saturday night and you got the night off.
Right.
You're a little stir crazy.
Wow, what? I'm supposed to be doing something.
My wife would be like, you need to go out.
Yeah,
just
that's
go out
right.
Go see a band.
Yeah, right. That's right. That's how she is too, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm very fortunate to have Armida in my life because she's definitely, you know, a blues, you know, she supports what I do and loves what I do. And you know, and she's in my corner.
Yeah, that's excellent.
And you know, a musician or you know, a music man or whatever needs a good lady,
a good lady
in their corner. You know, it seems to get better all the time too. You know, 27
like
years,
like fine wine.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah, and like I said, she really supported me when I won an award in 2012.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah. And that was another experience that I wasn't expecting, you know. But she kind of helped get all my bio together because I got a call from Bruce Englar, from president of Alligator Records.
Sure.
And he said, hey, Harv, have you ever been nominated for I said, no, I don't believe I have. And he said, well, I need all this stuff, you know. Anyway, he nominated me. So I'm home from lunch hour. And for my job, and I'm watching The Price is Right, and all of a sudden the phone rings. Well, I'm thinking Armida's not home, so I'm thinking it's Armida. You know,
yeah.
She usually called me at my lunch hour, and I pick up the phone. And it's this gentleman from the KBAs in Memphis. You know,
keeping the blues alive.
Hey, Harv, this is, you know, Jay from Keeping the Blues Alive, and. You know, you're nominated and your show has been picked for the National Public Radio Show of the Year. And I go, what? Hold on. You know, I said, let me turn down my TV. You know, so I turned down my TV. I said, now repeat that again. And he told me, and then he says, hey, can you get to Memphis? And I said, if I have to walk, I'll be there. And so it was in January. We went to Memphis. And like I said, I definitely thanked, of course, all the musicians and Bruce and different people that supported me to get this award. But I also thanked Armida for being in my corner and always helping me with different things. And I definitely thank my listeners because, you know, being a public radio station,
you need them.
You need them.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, because they support kind of your, you know, you being there, you know. Radio, unfortunately, it's not like when I first started. It was radio's business now, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And when I first started, I volunteered for 8 years before they put me on the payroll. Well, but when they became National Public Radio, they had to have so many, employees on the payroll. So they put me on there. But, you know, I get paid now, but I mean, it's I do it because I love it. And,
sure.
It helps with some of the things I do, but a lot of the money I get, I put it back into the show or whatever, to get things, you know, sometimes to help to produce the show or whatever, you know. But like I said, that was something I never expected, you know. And, you know, one thing I've got to say is, Elkhart is just a little town, you know. They say about 9,000 to 10,000 people are listening, you know, a show or a weekend or whatever. whatever.
But do the math times 34 years.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
You've impacted lots of people.
Right. But one thing I got to say is, you know, you probably would expect an award like that in a, you know, like
New York, Memphis, New York, Chicago.
Yeah, yeah, right. Bigger town. And so that was a real honor, you know.
Sure.
And so many of the musicians came out and said, hey, you definitely deserve this because you've supported all of us for these years, you know. And
definitely.
So it like I said, that show has, how I got the show, I guess,
tell me.
Yeah. Well, this gentleman that did a reggae show there at WVPE, he called me up because he seen me in a band one time. And so he called me up one day and he said, hey, Arv, how would you like to be a guest on this blues review show? Well, I kind of laughed. You know, I said, man, I don't know nothing about no radio. And he goes, oh, well, you just come up and talk. I'll run the equipment. And so anyway, he did that. And a week later, the manager called and said, hey, how would you like to be a host of this show? And I said, well, I'd love to, you know. And so anyway, I'm like bad company. I've
still there
34 years.
Yeah.
But, you know, Angie, one thing I'll say about me being there for 34 years, sometimes we don't always pick our destiny, you know. Sometimes it's picked.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I feel in some ways that the blues picked me. I didn't pick it, you know. I mean, because someone had to keep that torch going.
I've heard people talk about the blues as a dying genre.
Right.
And a dinosaur. And I totally disagree. And I think it's people like you that help keep it alive.
Right.
And there's plenty of people still making the music. I mean, maybe there's so much media out there now and American Idol and reality shows, but the music is still there, and
right.
it needs a channel. It needs a way to get to people's ears, and you do that.
Well, and I, you know, like I said, that's kind of when I started this show. I said, hey, I'm going to open it up to the community. It's a public radio station, so people, they pledge or they send their money to keep me on the air. So if I get a lot of requests, and if I have it, I'll definitely play it, because
right.
I feel like, well, it's your home for the blues. And so, I try to fill every request. There are some days that, you know, I don't have it, but I'll find the record for the next time. And if I can find it, I play it, you know. But I've tried to make it a community show, and, well, just like bringing musicians up there and a lot of the local musicians. And you've been on the show
sure.
a couple times, you know, and, you know, it's one of them honors and blessings in life. But what I'm trying to say about, you know, sometimes your destination is picked by, you know, I'm kind of a spiritual man, you know. And so sometimes I believe that, you know, maybe the man above had a little something to do with where
right.
I'm at today.
Yeah, you can make all kinds of plans, and all of a sudden, like, how did I end up here?
Right, right.
right.
And, you know, like I said, I've never plowed behind a mule, but I've had some blues. And so I feel, you know, some of the things I've gone through in my life, not all of them I'm happy about, but I feel all my troubles and trials, you know, or things that I've gone through has brought me where I'm at today. And I feel that where I'm at today, I'm supposed to be there.
Yeah.
I'm supposed to be doing what I'm doing. And that's what keeps me going there every weekend, or if they let me do it, you know, I'd do it every day, you know.
Yeah.
But I mean, I'm saying Saturday and Sunday. And I used to do a Wednesday night show, too, and I had to give it up because of, you know, there's not a lot of benefits in radio, but
right.
But like I said, I do it because I love the music. But anyway, I used to do a Wednesday night show. It was a 5-hour show where they broke in with news a couple of times. It was called Your Over the Hump Wednesday Night Blues Review. And you know, someday maybe when I retire, because I'll be 65, so I'm getting close to, you know, maybe, you know, getting to a retirement age, that I'll, maybe I'll come back on doing Wednesday nights again. They've already told me. They said, hey, Harv, you know, we'd love to get you back on Wednesday nights. And I still have people tell me how much they wish I was there on Wednesday nights, and I wish I was. But, you know, it's hard to do that and work, and you know what I'm saying.
And from your listeners' point of view, not everybody is available on a Saturday or Sunday.
That's
so
right.
They miss that Wednesday when
that's
it
right.
was their time to,
that's
to,
right.
to dial it up the show.
Right. And then people would just say, oh, you know, hey, we're kind of kicking back in bed and listening to you, you know. And the Wednesday night was sometimes I'd mix it in with Jimmy Smith, you know,
nice.
Put a little jazz
yeah.
in there, you know, a little B3 organ and horns and, you know, different things
sure.
like that, you know. Because, you know, a lot of people think that blues is all guitar, but, you know, I love guitar, but it wears me out after all. You know,
sure.
I don't
yeah.
want to hear a guitar all
yeah,
night long.
The harp blues, and I've recognized that. Listen to your show, you like a lot of the horns, too, the
right.
horn bands.
Oh, I love yeah. horns. I love harmonica, and I love the B3 organ,
sure.
you know, and the guitar after a while.
Yeah, you can't listen to it.
Yeah, all night long.
You know, variety is the spice of life.
You know, even Stevie Ray, he realized after a while that he could do so much with three-piece, and he brought in Reese Wymans, which,
mm-hmm.
You know, also played with Delvin McClinton, and now he's played with Joe Bonamassa. But anyway.
So I saw you in a photo with Steve Ray Vaughan.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that?
Yeah, that was at Merrillville in 1988. And he played there. And opening up was his brother, Jimmy Vaughan.
Oh, wow.
Kim Wilson, the Fabulous Thunderbirds. Yeah. Fran Cristatina on the drums. And Preston Hubbard on the stand-up bass, which he just passed away last year, you know. But anyway, it was the Fabulous Thunderbirds and Stevie Ray Vaughan. Well, at that time, you know, I started in 83, so, you know, the station, they didn't have a lot of money, so they wouldn't make you cards, you know, and
mm-hmm.
stuff. So I went out and made my own cards and put, you know, Blues Review and whatever. Well, I walked up after the show, and here's this big bodyguard
yeah.
stand in front of the door. I just walked in. Hey, I do this blue show, and I'd love to meet Stevie. Is it possible? And he goes, well, wait a minute, you know. And all of a sudden, he came down and said, hey, Stevie told me to bring you on up. And so we went up there, and man, he was so nice and thanked me for playing more than just the house is rocking.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
he says, you know, I know you'll play like Tin Pan Alley and, you know, different
yeah,
things.
Deeper cuts, yeah,
deeper
yeah.
cuts. And, but, yeah, it was great to get a picture of him. And I remember I was working on the railroad then. I worked on the railroad 20 years before I got injured. And, you know, on the railroad, you couldn't have a radio. So I got home from the work one night on the railroad. And all of a sudden, I turn on TV, and CNN's got, you know, Stevie Ray Vaughan
right.
dead. I'm going, what? You know,
all
I mean,
right. yeah.
And I've got this picture hanging on the wall of me and him. And, you know, I'm looking at this, and I'm calling people and going, hey, is this, you know, is this true? And, you know, and then, of course, Eric Clapton and Buddy Guy and all them.
Yeah,
Robert Cray and all them. Jimmy was there, you know. And, you know,
it's tragedy because he had seemed to just overcome some addictions and was making
right.
records with his
yes.
brother.
Yes,
and was sort of on the, you know, the track to some more success.
Right, and he was really happy, you know,
right.
and getting his happiness together. They say, I don't know, I wasn't there at that last show. I know some people that were, but
mm-hmm.
they say that Buddy Guy and Eric Clapton and all these different people, you know, that was on the side of the stage. You know, Eric Clapton, how do I follow that?
Yeah.
Buddy Guy said, oh, man, just be yourself. You know what I mean? But they say he was on fire. It was like he knew that was his last show.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That he couldn't make a mistake or, you know, or that he just, they never seen him play like
yeah.
that, you know. And one thing I'll say about Stevie Ray, he gave credit where credit was due. You know, when he played Otis Rush, he'd say, "Hey, this is Otis Rush, buddy guy."
Hubert Sumlin.
Hubert Sumlin, whatever. Yeah. You know, I mean, yeah, he gave credit to all these guys, you know, and Albert Collins, which, you know, a lot of people, I've said it over the, for 34 years, that Albert Collins has always been one of my favorite guitar players. And not just because of his sound, is because when I met him at Park West, for the first time, this was a CD release party after he left Alligator, went to Point Blank, and it was a Kinsey Report, Larry McRae, and Albert Collins, and I knew Johnny B. Gayden, and so he invited us up. It was at Park West, and so they invited us up, and the dressing room was just packed with people, and I said to Albert, if I can get a photo with you, I'll get out of your hair. And he grabbed me and he says, "Harb, don't you ever think you're in my hair?" Because he says, "If it wasn't for my fans and people like you that play my music, where would I be?" You know, so he said, "Don't you ever."
That's excellent. Yeah.
So, you know, I never, you know, never forgot that. And I knew then that Albert never forgot where he came from. You know, I mean, he drove his own bus.
Right.
You know what I mean? He remembered me. He played in Kalamazoo, and this is after I had my accident on the railroad, and I was on crutches, and he drives his bus up, and he goes, "Oh, Harv, what happened to you?" You know, wow. I mean, and yeah, he remembered my name, you know, and then I got this album cover that I bought from Crosscut Records, The Cool Sounds of Albert Collins. And it has a kind of a, it's not a cartoon, but it's a kind of a painting or a photo of him. Uh-huh. Yeah, you might have seen it. Anyway, it's The Cool Sounds of Albert Collins. And I took it to the Cubby Bear one night in Chicago, which is right across from...
from Wrigley, yeah.
Yeah, Wrigley Field. And anyway, he's, you know how Albert did, he strutted across the stage when the band was playing and stuff. And I held that over my head, and I could read his lips, and he says, "Where in the hell did you get that?" And anyway, after the show, he invited me back, and he signed it to, you know, me and Armita, and told us all about this album cover. He said, "You know this album cover? My wife bought that tuxedo at like a Goodwill or a Salvation Army, and cut the tails off of it to make a dinner jacket, you know, for me to play, you know." And, later on you find out that Gwen Collins, which is his wife, she wrote some of the songs and helped write, you know, like Put the Shoe on the Other Foot. You know, some of that is Gwen Collins, you know. He was just such a friendly guy, you know, and talked about that album. And so we seen Albert, quite a few times. In fact, I seen him one time at Biddy Mulligan's. Mm-hmm. You remember that club?
Oh, yeah.
And he brought the whole horn section out in the street and stopped traffic. He had that 100.
Sheridan,
and at that time, it wasn't cordless. It was he had a 100-foot cord, you know. Yeah. So, but, anyway, Albert was always one of my favorites, you know, and I play quite a bit of Albert on my show.
I'm
you
a
know?
Big fan.
Yeah.
As you see, I got Telecasters.
Yes,
I love the...
Yes, yes.
Yeah, Albert, one of a kind, you know, as far as that sound.
Yes,
you know?
One of a kind, yeah. And definitely he was one of them that when he hit a note, you knew it was Albert, you know, it's like BB or... You know, Lonnie Mack, different people like that. You know, they had that sound, you know. So,
how about Lonnie Mack? Do you have any experience with Lonnie
Mack? Yeah. He used to play Center Street Blues Cafe all the time. He played there quite often. And that's when he made them albums. You know, this is after Stevie Ray brought Lonnie Mack out of retirement and had them albums on Alligator Records. And so he played around Center Street a lot. That was there. Oreo Cookie Blues. Mm-hmm. He played acoustic and stuff. But one thing I'll remember about Lonnie, you know, he was a funny guy. He in Chicago, of course, to get backstage, you had to have your credentials, mm-hmm. you know. So we'd have our buttons that would say press on it.
Yeah.
And so Lonnie would walk up and
he'd
press right on your, you know, on your button.
Right, right.
Well, it says press, you know. But he also, you know, a lot of people don't realize that Lonnie Mack played on Roadhouse Blues for Jim Morrison and the Doors.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. That's him. And if on Roadhouse Blues, if you'll hear Jim Morrison, get it, Lonnie. Well, I can't repeat what he said about Jim Morrison.
Right.
But it wasn't a very good experience, you know.
I wonder if that song gets played so much on classic rock. I mean, if he got any kind of residuals or if he just got paid for the session.
Yeah, right? I'm not sure. But he just said that Jim Morrison wasn't the nicest human being. Like I said, I can't repeat exactly what he said.
Sure.
But anyway, that's Lonnie Mack on that Roadhouse Blues on Morrison's Hotel.
You know that song.
Yeah. And I've heard, I've got an album by A.C. Reed and the Spark Plugs. They do Roadhouse
Blues
on this album. Yeah, it's a Del Mar thing, uh-huh. you know. But A.C. Reed, he used to play at Center Street Blues Cafe, you know. And
so that was the hot spot, it sounds like.
Oh, yeah, Jimmy Johnson, you know, Charlie Musselwhite, John Watkins.
Sure.
The list goes on and on, you know. But,
and a lot of these guys would have stopped and come on your show.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Before Center Street, though, from 1976 to 1980, in the same building where we just talked about the 40th anniversary of Vegetable Buddies, mm-hmm. was Vegetable Buddies, where all Muddy Hooker, John Lee Hooker, Otis Rush, Buddy Guy, Junior Wells, Sun Seals, you know, the list goes on and on and on. Albert Collins, they all played there. Willie Dixon, Coco, and they all played there.
So had you worked with Buddy and Junior when they were sort of a team?
No, I seen them, but I didn't work with them. You know, I seen them at Vegetable Buddies, and I seen Otis Rush there. I seen, but experience I'll share with you that I just got that the man that was the one of the owners of the original Vegetable Buddies, he said that one night Otis Rush played there, so I must have not been there because I did see Otis Rush there. But he said one night Otis Rush walked in and the band just kept streaming in. He couldn't believe, well, you got a 12-piece band?
Oh, wow.
And he says what it turned out to be was E Street Band. They were playing at Notre Dame night with Springsteen. And Bruce wasn't with them, but little Stevie and Clarence Clemons, and they got up there and jammed with Otis Rush, you know. And man, when he told me that, I said, wow, that's something else to, you know, think that all these, you know, Clarence Clemons,
right,
them guys are up there, you know, was playing with Otis Rush, you know.
Stuff. I did a show at the San Francisco Blues Festival with Little Milton, and the Room Full of Blues was on the set, so the horn section came and said, we had charts, and it came to say it with it.
Right.
You know, you just never know, so it's kind of fun to have.
Yes.
You never know who's going to the audience, who's going to come up, or, you know, especially to have a whole band show up.
You know, the Room Full of Blues, they've been together about 50 years now.
Yeah.
And a lot of people might not know that Duke Robillard really started them out.
Yeah.
But I spent a little time with the Room Full of Blues when Sugar Ray Norcia was with them, which now he has Sugar Ray and the Blue Tones, harmonica player. But he was just pretty much singing then. But I had that album with him and Ronnie Earl called Deep Blues, and he did a song on there called My Home is a Prison. And he sang through the bullet, you know, my home is a prison, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I said, hey, Sugar, you know, would you do that song? And he goes, oh, man, I haven't done that in a long time. But he says, yeah, you know, I'll do it for you. So he sent the horn section off stage, brought just the band up and sang through the bullet, and did that My Home is a Prison, you know. But They even made a Christmas album where I seen where they did some Christmas tunes. You know, it was called The Room Full of Christmas, you know.
That's
and
fun.
Yeah, yeah. But Sugar Now is, you know, that Room Full of Blues has had so many different members over the, you know, the years.
You mentioned Ronnie Earl and, you know.
Oh, yeah, Ronnie Earl, Doug James. And, of course, some of them have passed on, too, you know.
Right.
I even got an album where the Room Full did with Big Joe Turner.
Called
Blues Train. And they did Last Night on there, you know, that song Last Night. And, that's when Ronnie was just a real young guitar player. I understand that, you know, Ronnie Earl is one of my favorite guitar players. And I understand that he didn't really pick up guitar until he was about 21, and he went to a 21 years old, went into a Muddy Waters show and was so engrossed. And man, he is, you know,
he's great.
Look where his playing is now.
I hate people like that.
Yeah. Yeah, you ain't a kid. Yeah. But I mean, you know, Ronnie is definitely a great guitar player. And you know, last summer at the Chicago Blues Festival, you know, he did that Otis Rush.
Yeah, we were
tribute.
Both there. That was a great,
man,
great show.
Oh, that's a show I'll never. And now Michael Ledbetter, which was with Nick Moss, mm-hmm. and of course Monster Mike Welch, they just came out an album on Delta Groove called Right Place, Right Time. And
I heard the record on your show.
Oh man,
yeah,
what a great album. But I always said that Michael Ledbetter, which he is a descendant of Lead Belly, he would go somewhere, and I'll tell you, his voice is probably, you know, he's one of the better ones in that contemporary blues scene. You know,
it seemed like that Otis Rush tribute was almost like a coming out party for him.
Yes.
Spotlight was on him, and he really, you know, kicked butt.
And Monster Mike too.
Yeah,
yeah, and because. You know, Monster Mike told Little Frank one time that his first few albums he had out on Tone Cool and all that, he says he couldn't even hardly get anybody to get, you know, wouldn't even touch the album, wouldn't even give him a listen, you know, and stuff. So it's just funny how, you know, sometimes you got to pay your dues, and then you people get to know you or they hear you and they go, oh, wow, you know.
But that's got to make you feel good
because
you've helped, you know, propel some of these people's careers and help them get heard.
Right.
You know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And, I've had Nick Moss and Mike Ledbetter on my show. It's really great to see Michael get out there on his own with a great record on Delta Groove.
Well, let's give a listen to Monster Mike Welch and Mike Ledbetter doing Right Place, Wrong Time, from last year's Chicago Blues Fest.
Someone for everybody. You hear me out there? I wonder where in the world is the one for me. say to someone for everybody. I tell you, I wonder where in the world is the one for me. Another day is gone. My heart remains in misery. I think I'll go downtown. Drown my sorrows in the nearest neighborhood bar. I think I'll go downtown, y'all. Drown my sorrows in the nearest neighborhood bar. I think I'll take the train and ride. My destiny only I know how far.
Tune in next week for part two of my interview with Ole Harv Stauffer. Blues Power.